Backstage with Mothership on Solid Rock Radio begins now. Hear the best in new music, artist interviews, stories from the road, and more. You are now backstage, and here's your host, Mothership.
Hey, everybody. Matt Smith, founder of the band Theocracy, is my guest today. We just had to talk about the highly awaited progressive power metal album, Mosaic.
How are you?
Doing great. Still trying to get over jet lag.
Oh, no doubt.
Are you still having problems?
I am. So I got sick, like, I think I probably told you at the festival, but, you know, a few weeks before the fest, I got COVID, lost my voice completely, and I'm still, like, struggling with the bronchitis. I'm on antibiotics now, so.
So you were already run down.
Yeah, hopefully it'll clear up here soon, but, yeah, that jet lag's always tough, man. You were in Germany longer than I was by quite a bit, so that's probably harder for you.
Yeah, I was there a few days longer, and I'm old. Well, we're going to jump right in and find out about you.
Because you are essentially Theocracy. So who is Matt Smith?
Oh, wow. That's a deep question right off the bat. Theocracy started as a solo project, and that was only because I grew up in Georgia, out in the country, sort of in the middle of nowhere. And so I didn't really know any other musicians who liked the same kind of music that I did back then. And all I wanted to do was write songs. And so I had, you know, I was writing and writing for years. And as a writer, the first songs you write are all terrible. And so, you know, that went on. And I thankfully was able to get all that out of my system. And then I eventually had a group of songs that I was happy with. And right around the same time, I had sent the demos out to some friends. And so this guy named Darren, who had a small label called Metal Ages, he heard the demos and said, oh, this is great. We should release it. And so basically the first album, was released as my demos back then, when I had no idea what I was doing other than writing, you know, and barely knew my way around a studio at all at that point. And so it was, you know, people always talk about that, you know, the solo album thing, like it's some great feat, like I'm a whiz kid or whatever, but it wasn't that at all. It was just that I didn't know anyone, you know, and then immediately after the first album came out, my cousin introduced me to his friend who was our first drummer named Sean. And he was 5 minutes up the road from me the whole time, you know, so it's amazing, you know, the way that God works these things out sometimes. And then, you know, from then on, it became an actual functioning band. You know, we kind of added members like a little bit at a time, like by the second album, we were a three piece. And then by the third album, we were a full five piece. And then from then on, it's stayed the same. So yeah, it's my story's not too exciting. Just, you know, country kid who loved music and wanted to be a songwriter. And that was about it.
So you're actually from Athens, Georgia, correct?
Correct. Yeah. Technically right outside of Athens, about, you know, 20 minutes or so, kind of out in more in the boonies, but Athens area is what we call home. Yeah.
So you're also my neighbor because I live in Loganville.
Yeah. We should, for any listeners who don't know, it's a funny story about that because I had no idea. You know, I think we'd gotten a couple of emails from Cindy before the first time we played the Loud and Proud Festival, which is, you know, in Germany, and flew over there and got off the plane, and Cindy comes up and says hello and says, I'm actually your neighbor from Loganville, Georgia, you know, so it was pretty surreal, you know, flying all the way to Germany and getting off the plane immediately, you know, meeting someone from right up the street. But that's been a very cool thing, you know, to have you around both the years that we've played it, because it's a nice little comforting slice of home.
Yeah, and we actually had a big slice of Georgia this year. We had not only you, but we had Death Therapy and Becoming the Archetype.
Exactly, yeah.
And we were all on the same plane.
But yeah, it is pretty funny how that works out. And, you know, especially because it's not like we would ever play with these bands in Georgia, you know.
Big difference in genre, yeah.
You know, I mean, maybe some random thing in Atlanta or something, but very unlikely.
Yep. Well, Georgia showed up to Germany and y'all showed out.
Yeah. Thank you.
I was very proud of everybody. The band started. What was the year? I don't think I got that from you.
Oh, goodness. First album, I think it came out the end of 2004. So maybe the end of 2003. We're right about 20 years, believe it or not.
What had been some of your musical influences?
Well, there were lots. I mean, it's kind of an interesting thing, I guess, because as a Christian, I came up, I was looking for bands that had the qualities that I loved in the bands that I love, like Queensryche or, you know, early Metallica and things like that, that had sort of a, I guess, an intelligence and a complexity to the music and the lyrics and everything. And I was too young for kind of the 80s heyday. And then by the time I came up, being sort of out in the middle of nowhere, like I said, the only Christian artists that I was exposed to kind of in the rock world in my very limited exposure sounded to me like second rate versions of whatever was on the radio, kind of like not so great popular music. Or then there were other bands that were, I thought were good, but were like really more extreme kind of death metal, whatever, you know? So that was kind of the impetus behind the whole thing. You know, I thought, well, as a Christian, I want to have, you know, a band out there that I want to listen to that has clearly puts the amount of time and energy into the music, and it's not repetitive and it's not trying to sound like, you know, whatever's popular. And when I say that again, that was just my, you know, sort of limited ignorant experience. You know what I mean? I'm sure there are plenty of those bands out there, but I had just missed them. So that's where it came from. It was just all about kind of, well, if I can't find the stuff out there, I may as well try to write it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I mean, having become a Christian in the 70s and kind of being around for the beginning of all of this, there was a cheesy kind of copycat kind of thing going on for a long time in Christian music. It was nice when it became quality stuff. We're our own music. We're going to do quality music. And that's how Demon Hunter got started as well. Ryan Clark was like, why don't we do this excellently? Why are we doing it like copying another band, you know?
Well, I've always thought that. I was like, as a Christian, shouldn't we be kind of at the cutting edge of the quality of art? I mean, yeah. If you're talking about kind of reputation and testimony, or however you want to categorize it, I mean, having kind of second rate stuff and the reputation that builds is not good for anyone. So, I mean, to me, it's a pretty serious, I don't know, I guess, expectation that we put on ourselves, because I feel like we should kind of be at the cutting edge of everything good. You know what I mean?
Right. Excellence.
Right.
Now, you've had some lineup changes in the band. Can you give us an idea of the most recent ones?
There was only one recently, which was a lead guitarist change. We got a new lead guitar player by the name of Taylor Washington. Mm-hmm. And I knew Taylor because one of my side gigs is doing studio work. And so I recorded and mixed the debut album for his band Paladin out of Atlanta. And so I knew him and knew he was a great guy and knew how talented he was. And then once the need came up, you know, I thought about him right away and said, hey, I know you've got a lot of other stuff going on, but if you're interested in... A funny story about that I didn't even realize at the time, but I knew he was like a Theocracy fan or whatever, you know, for years, but he had submitted, you know, guitar playing videos, you know, for contests that the labels had run in the past and things like that, which I had no idea about. So it was perfect. I just knew how great his playing was and how great his voice was, because he's the singer in Paladin too. So for me, especially, that's a huge treat, you know, to be able to harmonize with him, you know, live and kind of hear that voice coming back to him, even though I always tell him that he's actually a better singer than me. So really he should do the lead vocals, but so that was the only one recently.
So also you have Ernie. When did he come on board?
So he's our drummer, Ernie Toper, and he's actually been with us since right after the last album, Ghost Ship. Mm-hmm. So he didn't record the album, but every show we've played since then, he's played. So when we had this big unexpected break, you know, between the last two records, I think this is a cool moment for him to like finally have an album out, you know, with his name on it, because he's been playing with us for so long. And it's just like just now that he finally is on an actual album. So I'm happy for him, man, because both those guys are just consummate professionals and, you know, the nicest guys. So it's great.
Have they affected the sound in any way? Anything new? Of course, you say that Taylor's vocals have been a nice support underneath yours.
Yeah, he sings a couple lines on the new album, and he came in and all the writing was already done this time around. And in fact, we'd already recorded drum tracks, you know, when he joined. So it was pretty well in progress. But I'm sure, you know, once we're able to write together and things like that, it'll definitely affect the sound. But it's just the consistency, I think, is the way it's affected it. So far, I mean, it's great, you know, no shade at any former members or anything, but it's great when you have guys that show up and are professional and consistent and they're playing. And, you know, I mean, both those guys have played just hundreds and hundreds of shows over the years. So they know what it's all about and they're great.
How have you taken care of your voice over these years? Because it's still pretty strong now.
Well, thank you. It wasn't at my best at the Loud and Proud Festival because I've been sick for 5 weeks now, but I appreciate you saying that. You know, it's funny because I'm better about that now. You know, I remember the first couple tours, it was just, you know, no warm-ups, nothing, just getting up there and, you know, wondering why my voice felt terrible and felt like I'd been gargling razor blades the night before and no sleep and all that stuff. And then kind of learn eventually how to sort of, I've always tried to take care of it, but on those early tours, especially, like we've learned so much every time. And you know, I reached a point, I think maybe third tour of Europe, where I was like, I'm not going to do this unless we schedule days off, you know, unless we have places where I can actually sleep. You know, it's like, it doesn't matter as much for most instruments, but for a singer, it's like, if you can't sleep, I mean, you know, there's no way to, with the kind of how challenging what we do is to sing, like there's no way to recover or anything. So it's really just been learning kind of how to stand up for myself and, you know, kind of put my foot down when I need to about things like that. And then warm up and actually kind of treat it like a pro, you know, instead of just, you know, walk up on stage and hope that it's there. And at the same time, you know, have a little more grace with myself. You know, I try to do the best I can, but I don't feel like a failure as a human being if I can't hit a note one night or something, you know, like maybe I would have in the past. So it's just, you know, there's only so much you can control and try to drink lots of water and try to sleep and warm up. That's about it.
Yeah, a vocal instrument's not quite as forgiving as a regular instrument.
No, it's not. And then the thing, you know, a cool thing that you learn too is, and it's been a blessing and a curse, sort of the standard that I've tried to hold for us and myself and so forth. But, you know, people give you more grace sometimes than you give yourself. I mean, I at least for me, I remember our second tour of Europe, which was probably what led to me kind of eventually, you know, setting some parameters, but we all got sick at the same time, all lost our voices completely. If there was any sleep at all, it was in these close, tiny quarters. And so we were all spreading the same germs around and my voice was completely gone other than maybe like the lowest octave. So the shows for this whole stretch of the tour, I had to sing like two octaves down all the parts. And I was like, man, we're going to get booed off the stage or going to demand refunds or whatever. And the fans were great. They were so happy to be there and sang for us, you know, when I couldn't do it and all that. So that was kind of an early moment that was pretty encouraging, you know, because it that can certainly be stressful. I think sometimes people are willing to give you a little more grace than you give yourself sometimes. Yeah.
Yeah. They're just glad to see you.
Right.
So you're on a new label for this new album. Has that made any kind of a difference?
A lot more interviews, I can tell you that. It's been great. So the quick synopsis is, starting with our second album, Mirror of Souls, we were on a Swedish label called Ulterium. And the president of that label, a guy named Emil, he's a dear friend of mine, and he came to us, I don't remember exactly when it was, but between the last two albums, and I think it kind of arrived at the same point that I had arrived at in terms of sort of hitting a wall and being burned out. And he just said, I can't put out any more big albums right now. He needed more time for his family and away from the label stuff and everything else. So he said, I'm happy to help you, you know, try to find a new home for the next album, or if you want a self-release or whatever. He said, I'm happy to help in any way I can. He said, I don't have the time to do it myself. And so he was invaluable in hooking us up with Atomic Fire. And you know, we were fortunate enough where we had a few good offers from different labels. And so far, it's been great. I remember our first meeting with the Atomic Fire guys. You know, one of the guys said, you know, I bought two copies of Mirror of Souls when it came out. I bought the Japanese version so I'd have the bonus track, you know. So they were familiar and loved what we did going in. So it worked out great. And so far, it's been wonderful. The guys from that label came from Nuclear Blast. And so they have a lot of kind of muscle behind them. And it feels like this time around, everything has taken a big step up for sure.
Yeah. Well, I feel like it probably was worth the wait for you. You must be proud of this new album. Tell us the name of it and a little bit about it.
Yeah, the album's called Mosaic, and I'm very proud of it. You know, I guess prevailing feeling right now is just sort of relief that people are finally hearing it, because it feels like it's been done for so long and it's just been waiting. Because, long story semi-short, so after the last album, I, as I alluded to, I kind of hit a wall. I was just really burned out from, you know, those albums all take so much out of me. And between those and the tours and the other side jobs and the travel and everything else that I've been doing, I told the guys, I was like, I don't know if I can do another one of these. I need a break. And so we were taking a bit of a break anyway. And then, you know, COVID happened, and then we had a lineup change, and then we had the record label change. And so it just ended up being such a long, you know, it was already going to be a bit of time between before the next album, if we did one, but not nearly as long as it ended up being. So yeah, it's a huge relief that it's out. It's called Mosaic. It has, I think, kind of everything that we do in terms of the fast stuff, slow stuff, ballads, kind of thrashy stuff, long epic progressive things and more simple things. And it's a nice variety, which is interesting because, you know, it wasn't written sort of all in one cohesive chunk. You know, it was kind of as time went on, it was like a song would come and another song would come, and it's like, okay, I guess we do have at least one more of these in us, you know. You know, so yeah. And then the last song is like 19 minutes, so
yeah, we need to talk about that one for sure. Tell us a little bit about some of those tracks.
Sure. I guess starting with the title Mosaic and that song, I was thinking about sort of how when we look at our own lives, we can only see individual pieces, you know, a day here, a week here, a bad event here, a good event here. And we don't have the big picture that God uses these little vignettes to create, you know, over the course of a lifetime. And I was kind of thinking about that and thought that was a cool idea for a song. And so that's what the song Mosaic is about. And we thought that made a good album title. And I mentioned the kind of the concept to this guy, Stephen Howard, who did the cover art for us. He had like designed a poster for us years ago and reached out at the time and said, you know, if you guys ever need something more official in terms of artwork, you know, don't forget about me, basically. And so when I had that Mosaic idea, I thought, you know, this could work really well with some artwork. And so I basically presented him the super brief synopsis that I just told you. And he started sending back these ideas, I mean, in no time, that was pretty close to what you see in the final version, that I think is a nice reflection of that concept. Mm-hmm. You know, the big picture of the cover art is kind of made up of all these little individual vignettes, and that kind of becomes the mosaic. So that's the title track, but it's not a, you know, it's not a concept album. Or, you know, it's always kind of interesting. These things kind of reveal themselves as you're able to step back and get a little further away from it. You see themes that pop up repeatedly and things like that you don't necessarily intend, you know. And for me, with this album, there's a lot of kind of death and mortality and legacy and what we leave behind and what we're living for and things like that pop up a lot. And I think it's because, you know, after the last album, you know, all my grandparents passed away and lost other family members and things like that. So I guess those things were kind of on my mind, you know, consciously or subconsciously, and made their way into a lot of the songs, you know, sometimes really directly in a song like The Greatest Hope or Return to Dust or something like that. And then sometimes kind of more indirectly. So, you know, you'll see little themes like that pop up here and there in different ways, but overall it's just kind of an assortment of songs that aren't necessarily related, but I think make a nice complete whole of what we do.
I'm glad you mentioned the cover artwork. I really like that.
Man, he just knocked it out of the park.
He did.
Yeah, it was amazing working with him, especially when I got the vinyls and seeing the big, you know, how it looks big with the gatefold and everything. And even the paper that it's printed on, I mean, it kind of makes the art look even better, you know, than it does looking at it on a screen. So yeah, between Steven and Atomic Fire, they really did a great job with this one.
Well, the songs on this album really resonated with me. Leaving a legacy is very important. We don't know how long we're going to be here. We need to make a difference.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's a cliche, but it's really true. You know, I mean, especially as a Christian, you know, that's kind of all that matters in the way that mm-hmm. we interact with people. And the, are we furthering the cause of the kingdom or hindering things? And, you know, all this, this kind of builds in together, you know, and it's really a case of kind of stepping back, you know, after the songs have been done for a while and say, no, this was, this must've been on my mind more than I even realized.
Mm-hmm. Tell me about, is it Sincidious?
Sincidious, yeah.
I like that one.
Yeah, yeah, me too. That was, that one's
thrashy.
It's thrashy, and it's kind of interesting because it deals a little more with kind of current events. You know, it was, especially once COVID hit and the country kind of sort of went crazy in a lot of ways. And it was, it's kind of impossible to sort of not have an eye on a lot of what was going on. And so, you know, even that kind of worked its way into you know, what I was writing about and what was on my heart. And particularly in that song and songs like Flicker and things like that. And then, so yeah, Sincidious, I mean, and musically that one had been around for a while. You know, I had the main parts of the song, and then after kind of after the second chorus, I was like, I'm not sure where I should go from here. You know, and anybody got any ideas? And Jonathan, our other guitarist, had this whole section in the middle that he had been working on, which is this really cool thrashy sort of instrumental bit that led into a solo section, and it worked perfectly in that song. So we got together and hammered it out, and that was a nice bit of collaboration there.
Nice. Well, what was the inspiration for the saga Red Sea?
Red Sea is an interesting case because that was actually, that song actually predates the first Theocracy album, at least the skeleton of it. I wrote it when I was 19, and there's always been stuff from the archives that has kind of come out on the different albums. Like there was a song called Martyr on our second album that was from old times before the first record. And Red Sea was sort of the last one that I had been hanging on to from the archives. There are a couple of reasons, you know, I mean, we've done really long songs in the past, and that one was, a lot of it was kind of juvenile and needed a lot of work because I was so young when I wrote it. And so it was a little nerve wracking to revisit it. It was like, is this idea too obvious? Can it be made into something good enough to be released on a Theocracy album? And so when we had this downtime after the last record, I thought, all right, well, now's a good time as any to dig it out and take a look at it and see if it's, you know, if there's enough there to make it worthwhile. And so I pulled it out and threw away the parts that weren't good enough and wrote some new parts and kept the stuff that was good and rearranged it and made a demo and sent it to the guys and, you know, kind of not knowing what they would think. And thankfully they just loved it. And they said, oh, we got to work on this for sure. And so yeah, it's basically split into two parts. And, you know, the first half is, you know, the story from Exodus of the Israelites and Moses and the Red Sea. And then it makes a parallel in the second half to the Red Sea being the blood of Christ. And it kind of concludes, it's almost like a hymn in a way, you know, of mm-hmm. giving it sort of a real personal kind of spiritual spin on the story. And so I'm happy with the way it came out, and I'm happy that it's finally out there. You know, it's been, like I said, that one's
long
been sitting
coming.
Around for so long. Yeah, yeah. I'm glad it worked out.
Yeah. It was just waiting for its time.
It was, yeah. Yeah.
That's great. What do you want the fans to take away from this album?
Oh, man. I don't know. I guess I was stupid enough after the first album to say in a bunch of interviews publicly that we would never release a throwaway track and, you know, we would never phone it in with anything like that. And I don't regret saying that because I think that's the best way to be, but also added a lot of undue pressure to my life, you know, in terms of a lot of sleepless nights and a lot of throwing away ideas and starting again and wondering if this is good enough and this and that. And so I guess that's the big thing. I hope people kind of find it, I guess, worthy of sitting next to the rest of our catalog and that all the hard work that we put in pays off. And I as always, you know, after every album before release, you know, I just pray that God will use it to speak to people wherever they are in some way. And it's, that's always different, you know, because that's not a thing that is under my control whatsoever. And I've learned, you know, over the years that it's so beyond even any of my intent, you know, because, you know, people will come up after shows and talk about how this song you know, meant this to them or helped save their marriage or made them decide not to commit suicide or whatever. And it's like, in some cases, it's like, wow, I've never even thought about that song that way. You know, it was, but you know, it's where the person is in their life. And so, you know, it's an interesting thing being a musician and a songwriter, because I can't, you know, in a way, you know, when I write, I don't care what anybody thinks, you know, in terms of fans and things like that. If people like it, if they don't, then that's just not up to me. But then sort of after it's done, you know, God uses these things sometimes to speak to people in ways that just never even dawn on you. And that's when you kind of really realize how this whole thing is beyond me and beyond us and not, you know what I mean? It's not, all we can do is kind of do the best we can, with our gifts and whatever's in our heart, but the way that's ultimately used is just not up to us. So yeah, it's always the same prayer for me that God will use these things and whatever way that helps somebody out there that I probably haven't even thought of. So, that's the same. It's the same in the case of Mosaic. So, the amazing thing is, you know, I expected surely after such a long wait from the last album, you know, I had said, it doesn't matter what we release. It can be the best album ever in history, and people are going to be disappointed because they've built it up so much, you know, because of the weight. And so far, it seems people are thrilled with it.
You can count me in with those that are very happy with it, because I bought mine in Germany. I think I got one of the first copies.
Aw, thank you. Yeah, it's kind of shocking.
Yeah, that's great. Well, what was it like having an album release while you're in Europe?
Yeah, it was great. You know, it was exciting, and it was kind of interesting because there was so much going on, you know, between me being so sick and us trying to get ready for these shows and the pressure of, you know, plus all the travel and everything else. It's like, oh yeah, the album comes out today too, you know? So in a way it probably worked out for the best, because you couldn't kind of sit and think about it and kind of, you know, wonder so much about what people will think. But as you know, there's no better festival or situation to release something. So we played the two singles that have come out, you know, Return to Dust and the title track Mosaic. We played both of those at the shows, and they seemed to go over great. So it was wonderful. I mean, everybody was so excited that the new album was out. So yeah. I was really happy that it, you know, because you know how these things go. I mean, one thing goes wrong and it's like the album comes out a week later or whatever. So you know, obviously they're planned so far in advance, but especially with the way vinyl is nowadays and the way production lines are backed up and everything, you just never know. So I'm thankful that it actually really happened and people were there to see it. Yeah,
that was amazing, seeing the brand new box of CDs opened. Nothing like it.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Oh, I agree. And vinyl too, you know, seeing the artwork bigger and the, you know, we signed so many of those records, and every time it's like, oh, this looks great, you know, because it's all fresh and new and exciting.
Loud and Proud Festival really appreciates being part of the new album release excitement.
Oh, wow. It was absolutely our honor.
What about more shows? What's happening?
That's all being discussed. We've done now probably, I would guess, something like 6 full tours in Europe and in addition to festivals and one-offs and things like that. And then here in the US, we've played plenty of shows, but it's been less organized. It's been, you know, random shows here, festival here, things like that. So there's always been talk about finally doing, you know, some proper US touring. And the issue becomes with everyone in our band, you know, with families and side jobs and everything else. It's tough to get that window of, all right, here's 3 weeks or 4 weeks when everyone's available and can yeah, you know, do something. And so the discussion now is, you know, it's like we already have, you know, offers from Europe and everything else as usual. But the discussion is kind of, all right, if we do this and make it count, do we want to do what we've done in the past and do like a full European tour? Or do we want to concentrate on the US first? And I'm sure as usual, we'll end up doing a bit of both. But right now it's still all up in the air.
Well, with the new album, I'm sure there's going to be some people that are really interested in having you come through.
I hope so.
Yeah. All right. Well, I always ask, what is your favorite road snack?
Road snack. Man, that's a good question. Let me think. I'm not that much of a snack. I'm more of a drinking way too much water every day person.
That's so good for you.
As, The boring but honest answer is probably nothing. But if it was going to be something, it would be, we'll say like M&Ms. Yeah.
Are we talking classic M&Ms or peanut M&Ms?
Well, at Loud and Proud, I had peanut M&Ms because you guys just go all out, you know. But yeah, I'm not picky. You know, I definitely have a sweet tooth. I mean, you know, Reese's, of course.
Well, our time is up. I'm going to have to let you go.
Thank you for talking to me, and thanks for taking care of us like you always do.
Oh, glad to do it. I love it. And it's an honor and a privilege. And thank
Likewise.
You for all you do.
It's a pleasure. See you soon.
All right. Good night.
Thank you for listening. Stay tuned for more great music. And check out my blog page on the Solid Rock Radio website for my guests' social media links. If you've missed any of my past interviews, you can find them uploaded to podcast.solidrockradio.org. Have a wonderful week, and let's be kind to one another.